Welcome to the Dravet Syndrome edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the DS community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Special Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're here at the CanMed 23 conference at Marco Island, Florida, talking with Dr. Bonnie Goldstein of Los Angeles. She's a pediatric trained medical cannabis specialist licensed in California for 33 years. Among the 18,000 patients Dr. Goldstein has seen over the last 15 years, about 80% of the kids have refractory epilepsy. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much.
Why does cannabis work when it comes to epilepsy and its various forms?
So it's a bit of a loaded question because the chemistry and the physiology needs to be understood to really understand it. However, we have a system called the endocannabinoid system, which helps maintain homeostasis or balance in brain messages. In many patients who have neuroexcitatory conditions, which means the brain is overexcited and overfiring, there can be seizures, or like in children with autism, there can be manifest as abnormal or unwanted behaviors. When you take cannabis, it targets this endocannabinoid system as well as numerous other areas in the brain to send a message to decrease the excitatory message. It's like turning the volume down on your radio. And we know in children who have refractory epilepsy, which means that no medication has helped them, that a large percentage of these patients can have some response, maybe not seizure freedom, but some reduction of seizures with cannabinoid medicines that come from the cannabis plant.
You gave an example in your presentation just now of a teenager with a lot of issues, as you said, and following treatment with, a certain minor cannabinoid, I believe it was TCHA?
THCA.
He went 229 days without a seizure.
That's correct. So this was a young man with epilepsy, autism, but also mitochondrial disorder and metabolic disease. He's a child I call a unicorn because he really is quite unique in his response to many different compounds, including supplements and even food. When he came to me, he was having seizures every 20 to 30 days, and his mother had tried one drop of CBD, which didn't work. At the time, we had some THCA in the California dispensary model, and we were able to start him on one drop of THCA and titrate up, and he is now having much longer periods without seizures. The longest, I think, was 229 days, but often he'll go 100 days, 150 days, which certainly makes his quality of life and certainly his family's quality of life much better.
Now, you did say that it's cruel to send a message that we don't know enough about cannabis. In fact, we do know enough. In 2018, the FDA made headlines when it approved for the first time ever a therapy for Dravet syndrome, Epidiolex, that was cannabis-based. This seemed to be like a landmark decision that was unprecedented in U.S. history.
The reason they did that was because they were seeing what was happening with families in Colorado and California and other areas of the states using CBD to control their child's epilepsy. And so a pharmaceutical company saw that, had already been working in the cannabis space, and decided to go after that particular market, what they call, they got an IND for a rare syndromes or rare disorders to be able to get kind of fast track through the FDA. Now that product does work for some patients, however, it's what we call an isolate. It is lacking the other compounds that naturally occur in the cannabis plant. My analogy is you do not hand somebody an apple and say, can you take out one vitamin and then leave the rest of the apple behind? No, you should eat the whole apple. Mother Nature gives you all these compounds that are good for you. We know phytonutrients are good for us. Why would I want to take away compounds in the plant that are actually beneficial for the patient. That makes no sense unless you're having a patent and concerned with your shareholders. And I'm just going to call it out for what it is. It's a pharmaceutical model, and it's to make money, and I'm not criticizing them. They also help people with many other medications. However, with cannabis, what Mother Nature gives us can work beautifully. There's nothing to be afraid of. I'm the biggest chicken in the world, and if I can do it, anybody can do it.
I want to ask you something. In the world of epilepsy, I mean, epilepsy itself is relatively rare, but the indications for which this drug is approved is very rare. Dravet syndrome is a relatively small fraction of the world of epilepsy. I don't know how many patients there are, but it is considered a very rare disease.
Dravet, Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, and some of the other genetic or well-known syndromes that occur in the pediatric epilepsies are quite rare. But epilepsy itself affects 1 in 60 people in their lifetime.
Which is very similar to autism, which is 1 in 59, which are the numbers that I've seen.
It's lower than that. It's now 1 in 33. Latest data.
Wow. 1 in 33 are autistic. Mm-hmm. So there seems to be some overlap here, obviously. Why does cannabis work among people with epilepsy and among those people with a very rare form of epilepsy, which in this case the FDA approved the drug for?
Remember that the drugs that are approved, so anti-epileptic drugs, they have tested and true mechanisms of action, including, you know, GABA receptors and calcium channels and sodium channels, right? But for many patients, those targets are not going to be the answer for their particular epilepsy. We don't get to look, we have an EEG that we can look at, but we don't actually get to look at what's happening on the cellular level in a child's brain. We don't have that ability to do that. We do know that the endocannabinoid system exists as a target. This is why pharmaceutical companies are looking at cannabinoids that they can either synthetically create or use plant-derived, again, in a patent formula. But we have many compounds in the cannabis plant, including THC, which is an anticonvulsant, CBDV, which I talked about, which is an anticonvulsant. These all occur naturally in the plant and can be used in these patients. Now, we don't know which patients are going to respond. Not every Dravet patient responds to cannabis. Remember, they all have the same genetic defect that gives them that diagnosis, but their response to cannabis is unique. It's part of your genetic makeup. So no one can predict, but certainly any child that is suffering with intractable seizures deserves a chance to try cannabis medicine. I've seen children who, I'll give you an example, an 11-year-old that came to me who could not read and write at the age of 9, on cannabis medicine, is reading and writing at the age of 11 and just graduated high school last year and now is out in the community working. Is it perfect? No. Have her seizures reduced? 99%. She now can participate in her life. It was the seizures holding her back. It was the medication side effects holding her back, medicines that weren't working.
So let me ask you this. Given that FDA has already approved Epidiolex, do you see other FDA-approved medicines on the horizon, cannabis-based, for indications, including epilepsy and maybe others as well?
I do not see the FDA approving the botanical forms of cannabis in the forms that I use it, because there are over known 500 compounds in these. That means you have to test each and every compound. We're talking about another 200 years of research. What we need to do is recognize that cannabis medicine is unique and does not fit the pharmaceutical model. It is a botanical medicine, and it must have its own lane. It does not need to be shoved into this randomized controlled trials, because if you pick, like, let's say a 30-to-1 CBD-THC ratio and you take 30 kids, some are going to respond and some aren't. Does that mean it's not going to work for those children? No, they need something else. It's like saying we all should eat the same meal day in and day out. Well, we have different preferences. Our brains are different. Different cannabis compound makeups are important to be available for these families.
Do you think the pharmaceutical industry is holding cannabis back?
Yes, because the medical community has bought into the idea that something needs to be FDA approved to be medicine.
Okay. And so this isn't really medicine, as you say. It's not. I mean, it is and it isn't.
It's medicine for my families.
But if it's not FDA approved, doctors won't prescribe it.
Well, again, it can't be prescribed, and it's not going to be approved here in the United States, and really until it becomes a descheduled off our Controlled Substance Act. It is still categorized as a Schedule I controlled substance, which means that, and again, the definition is very important, no medicinal value, untrue, high addiction potential, untrue, lack of safety, untrue, high abuse, untrue. I can say that about tobacco and alcohol, which are both not on the schedule, are free to buy and kill people every year. But cannabis kills no one and is still stuck in that category. And this is all propaganda. And what's interesting now is that the research backs us up on epilepsy.
California is one of 32 states that have approved medical marijuana. There's something like 21 states that have approved recreational use. Do you see that number expanding? And as that number expands, do you think that medical cannabis will reach a point of acceptance at the federal level as well?
I do think at some point that it will be descheduled. It cannot be rescheduled because that means prescription and it's already available over the counter in adult use states. So I think descheduling, the process to deschedule is very difficult. Federal government appears to be happy just leaving states to do their own thing. It does create problems, but certainly we should be heading towards that time.
Dr. Bonnie Goldstein, thank you very much for your time. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.